cooking about a man by the American Legion who is blind but blind and not better. And the article points out things about how they accomplished this tremendous feat. And as I read that, I thought, man, there's things I know I've been learning from him, and I see good about taking all through the article that he did and how to be successful. And that's why I'm presenting here, and there's enough information that really is going to be important. So what I want to do right now is just quickly make sense of the points that we looked at this morning, and that way those who are not here can come here will be well. Now, the example is that he was out of his comfort zone. If I was going to say anybody's comfort zone, but especially the one who's blind. He carried his own burden, didn't expect everyone else to do the work for him. He made it by mental toughness. And that's what I'm trying to do. That's the number one thing you need to be able to do something like this. He wanted to come in. He was willing to do what it takes to get there. And he made it with joy and grace. Having been blind since he was 13, he knew how to get around, and even in his everyday life, he knows how to use joy and grace. He was ready. He made the proper preparations, and finally, he noticed that he faced death boldly. And now I want us to go to the next point, which is this. He accepted his ability. For Eric, who knew almost as soon as he could speak that he would lose his vision in his early teens, excelling as an athlete was the result of accepting his disability rather than denying it. Growing up with two brothers in Hong Kong and then in Western Connecticut, he was always an athletic kid, a tough gamer who developed a broken blind one-on-one basketball game that allowed him to work his way across the league. He was, as far as Ed said, a pretty normal kid. While by way, we might have run into a few more fresh cars than Ed did, but we didn't dwell on his going blind. When he lost his vision, Eric at first refused to use his cane or learn Braille, insisting he could somehow follow on as normal. I was so afraid I would seem like a freak. But after a few embarrassing stumbles, he couldn't even find the school restroom anymore, he admitted he needed help. For Eric, the key was acceptance. Not to fight his disability, but to learn to work within it. Not to transcend it, but to understand fully what it was capable of achieving within it. Not to pretend he had sight, but to build systems that allowed him to excel. Learning to accept our limits opens the door for us to seek help. That's what I think it is in this man's case. Let us do everything we can, but at the same time, let us be humble enough to acknowledge that we need God's help and we need the help of other people. This is why the scripture teaches that we need God. God does not do for us what we are able to do for ourselves. But He does for us what we are not able to do for ourselves. John chapter 9 illustrates this idea, I believe, perfectly. Here, interestingly, Jesus has shown healing of blindness. Jesus does the miraculous healing. But He does not do everything involved. He expects the blind man to do something along the way. That is the things for the man to do for himself. Jesus does the greater part of the miraculous healing, causing the heal or to see instantly, but the man will do the lesser part. Here's what it says in verse 9. After he does it, takes the best man to rise. Jesus then said, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which is kind of what it says. So he went and washed, and came back to see. Clearly, the healing is miraculous. It was of God. But Jesus does not lead the man to the water. He's used to getting around. Nor does he wash the man's eyes. He expects him to do it. I think the Lord looks at us in some way. He readjusted. He would never play basketball or catch a football game, but then he discovered wrestling. I realized I could take sight of people and slam them into the mat. He says, as a high school senior, he went all the way to the National Junior Freestyle Wrestling Championship. I think most of us have experienced what he did. And I can use myself as an example. You know, when you're in your high school, you've got to I love you. And somehow those things have turned around. For example, I went from wanting to be a physician with this doctor to a race car mechanic to a forklift. None of us I ever did. In reality, I moved the furniture, made furniture, operated a backhoe, and now I'm trying to learn how to teach first. You know, I bet all of us have similar dreams. Look at Moses. He lives in Egypt until he's 40. Then he lives in the wilderness until he's 80. Then he leaves Israel in the wilderness until he is 120. Look at Paul in Galatians chapter 1, that was right in chapter 2, but I would like to read from this part of what I'm saying about chapter. But here Paul had dreams as a Pharisee, and he was quite successful as a Pharisee. It's probably how we get all of these but he ends up preaching the gospel. Why is that? Well, God changed his course. God had some different things that he wanted this man to do. So look what he says in Galatians 1, starting at verse 11. And notice how Paul went along with the judgment. Galatians 1, starting at verse 11. But I make known to you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached by me was not according to man. For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but came through the revelation of Jesus Christ. For you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it. And I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my fathers. But when it pleased God, when it pleased God, things changed. He accepted me. But when it pleased God, he separated me from my mother's womb and called me to his grace, where he was studying me, that I might preach him among the Gentiles. I did not immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. But I went to Arabia and returned again to Damascus. I believe the time that he spent in Arabia is the time that he was actually spending with the Lord. While possibly seeing the resurrection Lord, and he, back in verse 11, spoke how he got the gospel. He received it straight from Jesus Christ, and was probably very much time in Arabia. But anyway, he was doing well in life, as the Lord might say. Then the Lord changes all the world. Just like Philip, I've always heard of Philip in Acts 8 when he's preaching in Samaria, converting the whole town. In the Bible, that's what he's saying. But the Lord takes him away from that successful work to a deserted road between Jerusalem and the coast to teach one man. Philip didn't fight it. He readjusted. Philip, Paul, and Aaron made the adjustments and dealt with life. Adjustments are necessary because this is not my world. This is not my life. This is my Father's world, as we just said. And Jesus is Lord of my life. but he uses something like this. He uses his blindness when it is convenient. Aaron Joseph is not shy about using his blindness to the point. So really go into a big kind of diagram. He uses disadvantage for advantage. Like Paul, using his sword in the flesh that we observed this morning in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, to lack the power of Christ. Paul is the first one to tell us that his citizenship is in heaven, Philippians chapter 3. But he is also a Roman citizen. And so in Acts chapter 22, when the Romans are about ready to scourge him, he reminds them it's not lawful for you to scourge the Roman citizen. And so, remember that list of all the stuff that you read in 2 Corinthians 11? You didn't keep scourging them. That's because he prevented that. That was the one piece of suffering that he did manage to escape. And because he used this in his advantage. He sought to excel, as Eric did, at what he could do. Eric first went hiding as a father in his 13, trying to cast his way into his blood with a right hand and quickly becoming frustrated, setting his toes on wrong conditions and bumping into brand new trucks. But when he tried rock climbing at 16, while his hands were disabled in New Hampshire, he was good. Like wrestling, it was a sport in which being blind didn't have to look at him. He took to it quickly, and through climbing, gradually found his way to formal mountaineering. He is an accomplished rock climber, rated 5.10 by 14 in the highway, and has led teams of sections of the 7-8 employers of the country. Now, each of us cannot do what most people in life or perhaps in the church do. Does that mean that there is nothing we can do? If I have breath, there is still something I can do. There are things I can accomplish. If I'm living, I've got goals and dreams and aspirations, and I can go for those things. Romans chapter 12 addresses the church and our words are right in the church and among one another. But I would also like to encourage you that the central way Paul does here and make a widespread application of it throughout your life rather than just restricting it to the church. The Holy Spirit teaches here that we each have something in which we are strong. We still have to do some things that we may not like doing and which in fact we may not understand. Stop! But when I find my skill, I indeed ought to do it. First of all, it says, again, verse 6 of Romans 12. Having been gifts differing according to the grace that was given to us, let us use them. Prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. For ministry, let us use it in our ministry. He who teaches, in teaching. He who exhorts, in education. He who gives, the liberality. He who leads, the building. He who shows mercy, is the church. Surely you see things being done around you, whether it's home, in the community, or you work here at the church. Paul says, anyone say to you, go for it and do it. Eric was not distracted, enabling him to be fast. Climbing with Eric isn't that different from climbing with a silent mountaineer. He let him go on his path, and he follows the sound, scuttling along using his custom-made climbing pole to feel his way along the trail. His climbing partner shout out helpful description. Death falls 2 feet to your left. I don't know if that looks any better. emergency helicopter evacuation strategy alone. He is fast, often running up the back of what the spring climbing. His partners all have scars from being jabbed by Eric's hunting bullets when they smoke it. In Luke 8 is the parable of the sower. One of the souls that receives seed also has competition for thorns. Competition for the moisture, for the nutrients that come from the sun once they get at all. And as a result, the seed that is sown becomes fruitless. What does that mean? Jesus tells them in verse 14. Now the ones that fell on thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of life, and bring no fruit to maturity. They get distracted. Other things enter in and distract them. That makes sense. Find someone who is successful at anything, and you will find someone who is able to concentrate, who can focus in without being distracted. Eric knew that others were watching him. For Eric, this was the greatest challenge of his life. If he failed, he would be laying down not just himself, but all of life, confirming that certain activities remain with his reserved on his side. Never forget, according to 1 Peter 2, that the world is lost. Now we may not realize it, but always amazes me when someone out in the world will tell me something that they've been observing in me in a while for a long time. So I've heard other people sort of say that. Or I've even had people in the world tell me what they thought of someone in the church. How highly they thought of it. Because they were watching it. But the Christian never can realize it. They're watching to see if we're hypocrites, if our faith allows us to live a better life, if it is possible to put into practice in real life what is written in the scriptures. They want to hear it, and if it sounds nice. But when it comes down to everyday living, can I really use what we're making this work? 1 Peter 2, verse 11 says, Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Did you repeat that? People are watching us. They have a keen eye for the way we live life. The world knows that we are climbing mountains. Where are they going? Well, I'm climbing mountains. Can we say that, follow me, I will show you how to do it. And so following Christ, and that's what he says. Eric was fearless. He argued to anyone who would listen that he was an experienced mountaineer, and that if he failed, it would be because of his heart, or his lungs, or his brain, rather than his eyes. He wasn't afraid of physical danger. He had made dozens of skydiving and scaled some of the most dangerous cliff faces in the world. But he was frightened of how the world would see him. But I knew that if I went to fail, that would feel better than if I didn't go at all. Many people's lives are ruled by fear, especially the fear of failure. Therefore, they never press on to success, because fear restrains them and defeat. Hold one team. Strike out many others. Strikeout teams allow many home runs. But if the batter never gives up the bat, it'll never even have a chance to get one run struck out. If the pitcher never throws, he'll never get the opportunity to say he has struck out one. I think I can understand what Eric said. I was going to go rather than just sitting back and learning all my life what I'm going to do. Proverbs chapter 24 has a verse in it. It gives an interesting application. Do not be tempted to see the negative that might be here, but understand why Solomon gives the number that appears in this verse. Proverbs 24, verse 16. For a righteous man may fall 7 times and rise again. But the wicked shall fall by 7. I believe what Solomon is telling us is that the successful keep trying, they keep getting knocked down, they keep getting up, never letting fear. Here is a fairly unpredictable one. Eric had to do it himself because others had to get attention to their own survival. Oxygen deprivation does strange things to the human body. Heart rate goes haywire, brain function decreases, blood thickens, intestines shut down. Bad ideas inexplicably pop into your head, especially about 25,000 feet. At that altitude, Eric could rely on no other stuff. The teammates would have to guide him, keep bringing the ball, making sure Eric stayed on the trail, but they would be primarily concerned about their own survival in some of the worst conditions on the trail. We cannot expect others to carry us the whole way. Remember the parable of the 10 virgins in Matthew 25? Let's turn to that passage, because while Christianity is about serving and saving others, it is also about saving ourselves. And that's all we need to be concerned about. I believe in 1 Corinthians 9. About saving others and then yourself being passed away. But I cannot expect others to sacrifice their comfort so I can be comfortable. There come times when I have to do things for myself. Not in the sense of forsaking others to serve self. But I cannot expect others to neglect themselves to simply serve me. Matthew 25, 7 verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be like the 10 virgins who put their lamps in their house and strive. And 5 of them arrived by the foolish. Those who are foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, the cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to them, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, said, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you. But go rather to those who sell and buy for yourself. While they went to buy, the bridegroom came to those who were ready, leaning with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. The answer said, surely I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is come. In my opinion, one of the dangers of the government doing everything for people as soon as they walk down is that they get used to that. They want the church to do the same thing. And they want the rest of us to do the same thing. Yes, the church is what we need to do. And sometimes we need help. There's no doubt about that. So when you can't test the government, you got it. Yeah, no. They're just saying you need to do it for a test. His disadvantage, Eric's disadvantage, turned into advantage as they drew close to the top. This guy really spent as one earlier. Ironically, Eric had some advantages as they closed in on the peak. For one thing, at that altitude, all the climbers were bothered and oxygen masks, restricting their vision so severely that they could not see their own feet. A condition Eric was used to. Also, for the final Christmas summit, again in the early evening. So both the climb was in pitch dark. Only illumination was from miners around. But Eric and the team began the final ascent at Camp 4, Kansas described as Dante's Inferno of Lights and Wings. They had been on the mountain for 2 minutes, climbing up and down and then up to the base camp to Camp 12, and then getting used to the oxygen and talking about the equipment, especially the oxygen penetration, so they could summit first. There was a 10,000 foot vertical fall into Tibet on one side, and a 7,000 foot fall into Nepal on the other. The south summit at 20,700 feet is where many climbers finally turned down. The 656-foot-long knife-edge ridge that leads to the Hillary Step is considered very popular in that place. It consists of ice, snow, and fragmented shale, and the only way to cross it is to take baby steps and anchor to the sled in the ice. You can feel the rock chip off the edge, and you can hear it falling down into the water. So if you just look at the picture up here, you can see this edge and over here as well. If you haven't climbed up that thing and doing it, then I'd like to run. So he uses a disadvantage. Now, we generally see disadvantages as being something that keeps me from getting what I want and keeps me from being what I want to be. But Romans chapter 8 shows that that's not the way God sees. Even as Joseph's disadvantages put him in a position to where he could be exalted and later save his family. So it is with our disadvantages. God is working, maneuvering us into places. Perhaps he's going to be better for us than maybe not for us at all. He might be using us to help someone else. He is also using our disadvantages to make us into something. This is Romans 8, starting verse 20. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. For whom He foreknew, He also predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son, that He might be the firstborn among many brethren. And by the way, what else you said a bunch of in here? I think the good that they were referenced to there in verse 28 is that God wants to make us into the image of Jesus Christ. We're attempting to look good there as meaning everything's going to work out the way I want. That's not necessarily the way it happens, is it? God's trying to make me into Jesus Christ. Therefore, we should not fret over our disadvantages. Situations will arise in which they will later become advantages. We just need to be patient for that time. Curious what he said. The dozens of people over the years, 12 people, that a woman once asked me, Don, what do you do after all the struggling, you have nothing wrong but yourself? And she said that, well, that was something that was done. You don't want that to happen. And I think that's exactly what God's trying to do. It's our faith that we will rely on Him. Success. The water was finally clearing as they reached the Hillary Step, the 39-foot rock face that is the last major obstacle for the sea summit. Then it climbed up the cliff, better walking over the top, and celebrated with a dry heat and joy. And that was 45 minutes of walking up a sharp little slope to the place. Look around, please. And so blind man. And they were saying, oh, well, just take a second and look around. What is it like to reach the top one? Well, look at the soldiers after the first battle. Look at the winning Super Bowl team. Look at old Christians. As they approach death's door. All these appear to be ancient up. And yet, they have joy. Look at Jesus on the cross saying, it is finished. But here Paul says, Timothy, I have fought the fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, not to me only, but also to all who love the church. One last thing. Now, maybe you're thinking, well, you know, this was all an inspiring story of a man who did something that probably none of us will ever do. Well, what do I have to do? Well, we can talk and tell this application all the way, but I want you to listen to the last thing that's in the heart, is the last part of the story. Let's call it heart and end. I'm talking about it. In between posing for photos and signing other passengers going out, Eric talks about how eager he was to get back home. He says, some have seen heaven with grace, covered in red and red and rock. But then he thinks about a moment a few months ago before Everest, when he was walking down the street in Colorado with daughter Emma in her front car. They were on their way to buy some banana bread for his wallet, and Emma was pouring on his hand. Her little fingers curled around to his desk phone. That was it, summit too, he said. There are summits everywhere. You just have to know. What is your summit? Surely you must realize and know that there are many summits in life. And I believe the Mount Everest of the Spirit is reaching heaven. Are you on the mountain? Are you on the trail that leads to heaven? You must first scale Mount Zion, which is the church. That's the launching pad for the great mountain of life. If we can help you on that journey, please support right now.